Who's opening? You want me to do it, or you want to?
Whichever you pick. I guess we need to coordinate that, actually.
I'll do it.
I'll do the next one. We'll trade off. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Okay. Yeah. All set.
Yes.
Welcome to Biff, a podcast about superhero movies and TV shows and probably anything else we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Dan's not here.
The kids are going to play.
We have no adult supervision.
Yeah, the title of this episode.
It's just me and my wonderful cohort, Guy English.
So, John, you said you were cutting a tree the other day. How was that?
Welcome to the garden, the pruning podcast. Welcome to Prune.
Just immediately, like, let's just
not a podcast about prunes.
Right. Well, I mean,
it was a plum tree.
Oh, actually. Was it? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So that's actually all.
Don't they make are prunes made out of plums?
Yes, they're dried plums, aren't they?
Or are they dried figs?
Ooh.
This is why we don't do a podcast called Prune.
No, this is poor Dan is going to hear this and he's just going to be like, what the hell have you done?
Rolling his eyes.
You're already googling prunes. Yeah.
but like, as an older gentleman who is now pruned, I am like scraped and bruised beyond belief.
Oh, I thought you were gonna
however, I can still get up in a tree.
Well, so that's good.
I got that going. Yeah. For me,
I thought you were going to make a prune juice joke.
No. Oh, yeah, no.
But, I mean, that's for Klingons, too, so fine.
Yes. It's a warrior's drink.
Want to talk about...
But we are here not to talk about trees, but to talk about... Oh, God, what episode is it? Dan always has this stuff right on hand.
That's professional. This episode is called From the Ashes. It is... The 11th episode of season six.
I just remembered that. And we have two more?
Yes. There's 13 in this season. Believe. Yeah.
Man. And
man,
I
people are going
to
really,
do
really
the,
appreciate Dan after this. But yes.
I know.
I know I am.
Dan is, I don't know if viewers, if listeners or readers, I said viewers and then readers.
That's good. You got all the bases covered.
both of which are technically incorrect, but we like to call you our readers. If you follow Dan's Instagram account, I don't know if Dan's Instagram account is protected, but you might have noticed that Dan was on an island.
He was.
Yeah.
For five days. He's gonna come back something else.
Continuing a theme.
So my understanding is that you were gonna do the
Yes, that is right. That is correct. I am going to do the recap, and let's get into it. So Yo-Yo wakes up in the Zephyr, trapped with Mac, but turns out Mac is possessed by Ezel, and Yo-Yo inadvertently tells her about Benson. Meanwhile, the rest of the team is trying to track the Zephyr and find a way to counteract Ezel's body snatching. May thinks Coulson is still inside Sarge, but Daisy just wants to use him as a weapon against Ezel. Ezel gets Benson, who tells her that there are three possible sites for the temple, but he thinks it's one in particular. Yo-Yo, though, tips him off that Mac is possessed, that it's, you know, that it's not Mac, it's Ezel, and he deletes the data from his tablet. She uses the gravitonium sphere to bring back Benson's dead partner and then kill him right in front of him and says that she'll keep doing it, and then he finally gives in. Daisy reads the note that Coulson left her before he died, and Sarge admits he's starting to remember some things. Daisy thinks Ezel killing Sarge made him remember more, so she tries to kill him again. She does kill him again. She keeps pushing Sarge, and he breaks out of the room. She gets the sword, determined to either get information or kill him. Mac and Yo-Yo trick Ezel and get Benson in a containment chamber and drop him in the Yucatan.
I love that plan. That plan was so good.
I love it because it didn't seem like that was what they were going to do.
No, I know. It,
right? I mean, it didn't seem like the obvious thing at all.
No, it felt like they were going to try to trap her in there. But like just the switcheroo by grabbing her little MacGuffin device.
Right.
Like it's basically a three-card Monty, and then he ends up in the pod and they eject it, which is brilliant.
Right. And following on the theme of Mac mostly just like deciding he's going to rely on the team.
Yeah.
Like, he's going along for the ride and he's going to do whatever he can, but he doesn't seem to think that what he does is going to be what stops her, really.
Right. Yeah. Well,
he thinks he's just dropping things. He's, you know, like dropping Benson so that the rest of the group can figure out where they're
going.
Yeah.
But I love that too. Cause I mean, he's like, the most useful thing I can do is get her out of here. Like that's his contribution. What's he going to do? Right. Stand there and pace and like get frustrated at people. I like him a lot. He's really growing on me as a character.
And
I've always liked him. Yeah. Anyway,
when he first appeared, I like Trip so much at the time.
Yeah, me too.
And then they, you know, it's like they brought him on and then they killed Trip and I was upset about that. Like, I was like, why did they kill Trip? I mean, they sort of killed Trip just so that there was some sort of a consequence. It didn't seem like they really needed to kill Trip.
Maybe there was too much of maybe the actor was changing. I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to do it anymore.
Like, I don't know.
Behind the scenes stuff going on. But
he didn't see. I mean, I think I saw an interview with him where he was upset that he didn't want to leave.
Oh,
but
okay.
They did bring him back. They brought him back later as part of, and when he was in the framework.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but so I mean, I figured they didn't hate him that much. But anyway, every once in a while, somebody's got to die, I guess. So Daisy gets the sword, and she's determined to, I forget where I left off, but she's determined to either get information or kill Sarge. Mac and Yo-Yo... Oh, I said this one. So Daisy's going to kill Sarge until they're yelling at each other, and he blurts out Sky. He calls her Sky. He's telling her to kill him, and she tells him... And then he tells her that she was always capable of more than she thought, which, you know, sort of indicates that he's remembering stuff about their past together. But she won't kill him. Mac and Yo-Yo are tied up in the temple. Deke figures out from something that Sarge said that Ezel is using resonant frequencies to inhabit the bodies, and they think that the blades counteract that, so they're going to use those to prevent her from capturing bodies. The team picks up Benson, who tells them where to find Ezel. Ezel opens the gravitonium device and wants to reconstitute the monoliths from Mac and Yo-Yo's fears. They say they'll get nothing from them, but then Flint, the kid from the future space station, suddenly appears.
Yeah, I couldn't place him because I didn't pay enough attention last year. But he's not their child from a future timeline, right? He's just a kid from.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think that was dropped. He was just a kid that she befriended in particular. I think.
Oh right, yeah. Was he the guy stealing apples and stuff?
He turns out, I think so. Yeah, he turns out to be an Inhuman, right?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
I remember correctly, I don't remember exactly how he gets killed. I meant to go back and watch that, and I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But anyway, yeah. Somehow he dies in the future, and that is very upsetting to the group because they had grown fond of him, as I recall. So, and then in the bumper, the Hunters want to establish Chronica 3, while Atara wants to go back in time and save Chronica 2. I believe that's what the disagreement was about. And then the Hunters decide they can't work with her, so they kill her. And the leader says to the others, "You have your new targets," which I presume is,
I mean,
our friends, our fine friends at SHIELD.
It'd be a little weird if it wasn't.
What if it was somebody else completely?
Some rando. Just
somebody we haven't seen.
Just
yet.
The bumper on the next two episodes of just some random dude just getting whacked by these guys.
That would be pretty funny.
That would be pretty funny. So all in all, good recap, even though I tried to slow down a little bit. No. How'd you?
I like the tight recaps. We can keep talking about it.
Yeah, right. It's the tight recaps are good. I'd rather get the business out of the way and then actually discuss it. You know, so
right. So I kind of saw at some point earlier in the episode, I thought he's gonna call her Sky.
I hadn't figured that.
I saw that coming, and yet at the same time, it was still, you know, kind of a touching moment when it happened.
It was touching. I really liked that scene. The look on her face. They're both, well, obviously Clark Gregg is a very accomplished actor. You know, he can definitely.
I think she's great.
She
too.
Has.
I think
become
she's really,
really,
really
great. Yeah. when you're just doing one role all the time, maybe it's difficult, but I think they give them enough interesting situations that you do actually get acting jobs over the course of all of the seasons.
Right.
You know, like even Amell is like better. And I don't mean even Amell in that he's a bad actor, but I mean it like you've had 7 years of inhabiting this character and getting into all sorts of weird emotional states. And that can't, you know, you're going to become a better actor at the end of that. Just working every day, like, come on, that's going to add up.
I think that group is great too. Yeah. I mean, I think this group is great, but I also think that group is great. I mean, I think S.H.I.E.L.D. is a slightly better show.
It is. It's a better show. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I love Arrow. Like, I'm excited to go back and watch it.
I do too, obviously. Yeah. But
no, I think this is just a better show.
Yeah. I think it's they've got more money, and I think it's a little bit better written.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's one of those things where, obligatory Star Trek reference, DS9 is better, but if you loved TNG, that's always your show, sort of thing. You know?
Right. Anyway. Right. Yeah. I was thinking about that because I just watched What We Leave Behind.
Right.
Which is the DS9 documentary. Yeah. Which is really, that's a really nice, it's really well done, I think. Mm. There's a couple of, you know, there's some sappy stuff in it too, but but it's definitely worth watching if you enjoy Deep Space Nine at all.
I do, and I've been meaning to watch that for a while. And it's, I don't know, it's apparently it's pretty revealing, like not in a tell-all way sort of thing. Like,
well, there's some of that. Yeah. There's a little bit of that. I mean, this is outside of our wheelhouse.
Right. Yeah.
Not a superhero show. That's my that's my judgment.
They kind of are,
but there's an interesting thing with Nana Visitor and the guy who plays Dukat. What's his name? Marco Lyman.
Oh, really? They don't like each other?
I guess not. I mean, you couldn't say for sure whether it's some of it, but they're not interviewed in the same room, and it's just. At one point, she says that at one point they came to her and were going to suggest that she heard that Kira have an affair with Dukat, and she was like, no, it can be. And as she's saying, you know, saying this to the camera, she's like, no. And I said, no, I can't be. Yeah, I could see having an affair with a Cardassian, but not Mark Alamo. And then she goes, I mean, go Dukat.
That's perfect. I like her a lot. She cracked me up. So she's
great. I think she's one of the great ones in that show.
Anyway,
particularly just as like a person outside of the show, seemingly.
I don't know. I don't follow these people closely in their regular lives, but every time I see her somehow, I'm like, hey, you just seem like awesome. So, yeah.
Right.
Want to talk about trees again?
Back to this show. There's definitely some good moments in here. There's a nice moment between Mac and Yo-Yo in the chamber, because Mac had said, you know, the only reason that he was coming was because it was a tactical decision.
Yep.
And then he admits that it was not just a tactical
decision. I really like that scene for two things. A, he's trying to explain to Yo-Yo why he's there, but it also is an opportunity to tell the audience what his thinking is. And what his plans are, and the whole notion of like, look, one of us is always awake. We're buying time for the team down there to get what needs to be done. Like, it just explains his rationale all the way through without having to make it feel like exposition. You know, like she's questioning his motivation, and he comes back with what his motivation is. It's not a, oh, hey, by the way, let me tell you what my plan is. It's a natural back and forth, which is great. And the scene,
they set that up like in three different ways in this episode, I think, because there's that one, and then there's the conflict between mostly Daisy and May about Sarge, and then there's the sort of conflict about trying to develop something to counteract her power,
right?
And they use those like the Mac Yo-Yo thing is a little bit less, you know, dire, I guess. It's more a revealing personal thing than anything else, whereas the other two are much more integral to the episode's plot.
Right, but I did, to your point, I really did like that moment in the containment pod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just admits it, like, look, I, you know, Of course I came for you.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, guess what? Yeah, of course. Does, you know, yeah. Like, not just those characters, pretty much any character, any, hopefully anybody would stick their neck out for a loved one like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So that's, you know, I like that she also was just like, yeah, of course, I'd come for you too. So that's nice.
Yeah.
So now
yeah.
They can work together as a team and they can stop it, where they can get back. What is this app? I'm trying to remember. He says, doesn't it feel good to fight again? They've just been so cold to each other that they haven't even bickered. They haven't even bickered about basic stuff that would be bickered about, because they like, they just don't want to get anything out of each other at all. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. So the other two plot things, I felt like maybe the end result of the Daisy thing was a little too obvious. It seemed like knowing this show, I felt like I knew how it was going to go. Like,
yeah,
I know she's like being gruff and she thinks she's just going to kill him and or beat him or stab him or do whatever she has to do in order to get what she wants out of him. Well, the only thing that she wants is killing Ezel, and then, you know, of course, no, there's a way that he reveals to her that there's some of Coulson in him,
right.
And you know, then she melts.
Yeah. Yeah, again, back to the acting, she melts real good. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Even the way she drops the sword is like, she doesn't throw it down. It just kind of like falls out of her hand.
Right.
She just gives up.
Yeah.
And she gives him like the biggest hug, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit sort of obvious. I did not expect her to go into that room. And you kind of skipped over the interrogation scenes a little bit. But whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Suffice to say, May tries... oddly gets like sort of does the friendly treatment and then that's what sets up the conflict between May and Daisy in this episode, is that Daisy is like, let's just go beat him up, and May has some great dialogue where she basically pulls rank, even though she doesn't rank her right now, but she's like, look, I wish back in the day when I was your SO, when I know what Phil Coulson would have said to you. He would have basically read you the riot act and say that we look for the good in people and we try to do what's right. If you want to go beat him up, that's on you. And if it goes wrong, that's on you. But I'm not interested in that. And I love that, because that is a conflict that made sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the one nice thing that they did, you know, like I said, I felt like the ultimate result, I had a feeling what was going to happen. But the one thing that I wasn't expecting was that she went in and read the letter from Coulson, and I was sort of expecting her to come out much softer and more willing to, you know, like, remember Coulson and like, you know, and if there's a chance that Coulson's in there, then we need to take that chance. And then, nope, she comes out and she like snaps his neck.
Yeah, I did not see that coming. I really didn't see the neck snapping coming. Because, it's a direct cut from her feeling sad, sitting on his bed, reading the letter. I don't know why he has a letter to her in his bedside table. Maybe he's got one for everybody. Like, that's...
I think that's her room.
Oh, is it her
room?
That's her room. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he gave her that letter at the end of the last season. Like, as he's walking off the plane, he said he left a letter in her room.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah. Yeah. Which that whole scene is just amazing. I mean, I've watched that scene, you know, that whole, the ending of last season, I've watched several, many times, as a matter of fact. And all of them handle that so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we've discussed before, would have been a great, you know, if that had been the end of the show, it would have been a great end of the show. But I'm glad it wasn't, because I still like the show.
Yeah. In fact, when they were standing on the beach there, I was so happy that I was like, okay, that's it, end it. And then they didn't, and I was a little annoyed. Because I'm like, well, come on, what else are you going to do? You've wrapped it up. I was wrong. This is this is quite remarkably good. And
So the other thing that plays out is the conflict. You know, so Deke is constantly like trying to keep up with Fitzsimmons.
Yeah.
And, you know, chiming in and then constantly trying to finish their sentences and like and you know show that he's part of the team.
Yeah,
too,
they're doing
following sort of following them around like a puppy dog.
Right, they're doing Data and Geordi, and he's doing what's his name?
Barkley.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Broccoli. he's doing broccoli. Although he keeps saying kind of dumb stuff, which is not like a broccoli thing to do. He's always off. And like what I liked is you said it right about the puppy dog thing is that he. When an idea comes up, he agrees with it, and then when they discard it, he's like, yeah, that was dumb, and he just goes on to the next one. Like, he's not doing any thinking. He just wants to root for the team, which is sort of adorable.
Yeah. But then he figures out, you know, he's the one who solves
right,
the
which I think is, yeah, I mean, what did I saw that coming a mile away, you know?
Like, see, I didn't see that part coming. I mean, maybe I should have, but I saw the other thing and I didn't see that one.
Oh, it's just because like you know you're beating up on the character quite a bit, but
yeah,
they
right.
essentially
yeah.
want to make him like not yeah. a dummy.
It seems like they beat up on him so much.
Yeah,
that
yeah, maybe.
Often feel
yeah,
like.
Maybe they could have just gone with it.
like if they beat up on him throughout the whole episode, it wouldn't be that.
Yeah,
surprised.
That's true. Yeah, but Fitzsimmons always figure it out. So
yeah,
whatever. But the. Yeah, the insight into the knife thing was cool.
Yeah. And I like it that, you know, I mean, since he's their grandson, that he's got some of their smarts, too. I mean, he is kind of a dope, but he's also pretty smart about certain things.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to get into a eugenics conversation.
No, I don't either. But I mean, I just, you know.
But yeah, no, I know where you're going. Yes, whatever. Like, he has an inquisitiveness about him that has... And mostly I think it's resourcefulness from his time on the station, right? Like, yeah,
right,
hacking stuff and always being on the ball. And he stole all that shield tech, which is another resourceful thing to do to start his company. Like, he's clearly brilliant and sort of not a lot of scruples. But
right. Certainly not as much as the rest of the team.
No. But he's, like, lovably. Like, he doesn't use it for evil. It's not like he, like... started AIM or you know like he didn't go and try to destroy anything or he made a fantasy video game with a sexy daisy which you know
bad enough
it's bad enough but
not AIM but bad enough.
No, but that's like baseline douchebag that you know it's not not like weapons dealer douchebag so
right AIM was in
Iron Man 3
like the third Iron Man movie right.
Yep.
That was Aldrich Killian's company.
Yeah, which was, I feel, maybe a bit of a waste for that organization, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could always come back. I mean, they're bringing the Ten Rings thing back.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. What's the name of it?
Shang-Chi, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I can never remember what.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I am glad Iron Man stayed away from that, because, so just... For the viewers at home, if you don't follow Iron Man, the Mandarin is one of his big enemies, because the original
in the early late 60s,
because the original character had his heart damaged by shrapnel in Vietnam.
Yeah,
Korea.
I think it was Vietnam. I think it was late enough that we were involved in Vietnam. The Korean War was over because it would have been earlier mid-60s.
Yeah, but Vietnam hadn't heated up for the Americans yet.
Not as much, but I think I think he was supposedly there.
Anyway, regardless, basically either Korea or Vietnam. And so the Mandarin was a racist as hell characterization of like basically Orientalism, I don't know, like all of the old Asian tropes, like the long mustache, like they literally drew him yellow. It was bad, and
he wasn't the only one. I mean, they also had who's the other guy? I have this comic book too. The Yellow Claw.
Oh God,
Yellow Claw.
I mean, even the name.
Yes,
you can't
and they're drawn. I mean, if you go back and look at how they're drawn, it's
so
awful.
Bad. You can't rehabilitate those people. Yeah.
No.
Like, those characters. Like, they...
Apparently, they did do a little bit of a rehabilitation of the Yellow Claw. I mean, they had him in Agents of... Can't remember the one with the gorilla man with gorilla man.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, and he is much less like he's revealed to have like had like a different actual agenda and was like playing up. So supposedly a lot of like what he was tongue in cheek.
Oh, that's interesting because that's kind of what they did with the Mandarin in Iron Man 3, right?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah,
except
right.
They gave him a whole bunch of. They called him the Mandarin, but they gave him a whole bunch of sort of. I don't know, Middle Eastern sort of, whatever. But anyway, so the Ten Rings in Iron Man, originally they were magical rings that the Mandarin wore, and each thing had a different power. Each ring had a different power, and magic versus technology, basically was the concept. In the Iron Man movie, they turned the Ten Rings into effectively a terrorist organization.
Right, right. So we'll see. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they... do with that after that.
Back to your tree.
The 10 trees.
Benson paid off.
Yeah.
Did not release.
Yeah, we were talking about the fact that we hadn't seen him for a little while in the last episode, and lo and behold, there he is.
Yeah, and the character choices that they'd made for him paid off in a big way. That... We hadn't seen him in a while. Previously we'd said maybe he was going to get pushed out because Fitzsimmons were back. But they used that character in a great way. And he's another terrific actor. That scene where was Thomas his lover or his partner?
That was his partner. Okay. Yeah, that was his, I think his husband, actually.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, because he says husband in the bar. I couldn't remember.
Right.
Because at first I'm like, is that his son? Because there seems to be an age difference between them, which, whatever, that's not a thing. But also, he's probably frozen in time when he died, right? So,
I think that's probably part of it. So they, they made him old enough, but probably a little bit younger than he is now.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved that Benson would not give anything up to Izell, even after that guy got Izell in the form of Mac really pulled an Ollie Queen on that guy and just shifted him in the throat. That was hardcore.
That poor guy. Poor guy.
And it was gruesome, and it wasn't like they didn't really cut away, and it was
no. They had, like the blood's coming out of his neck.
He's
and
like gargling for a while. Like that's
just like
oh, it's not like just dropping somebody and being like, okay, there's a there's an iconic death and just go with it.
That took a little bit.
That took a bit. That hurt. And I love Benson's little rejoinder when he's like, she threatens him with death or something. And he's like, I've already lost everything. Death doesn't scare me. I guess one of the limits of her power is that if she possesses somebody, she doesn't get their memories, right?
Right,
and that's how you can.
She phases into the body and can control it. You know, its motor functions, but the person basically passes out.
So it's not mind control; it's a physical control based on this harmonics thing.
Yeah,
I like that. That's a good.
So now we know the
exactly.
rules,
right? Yeah, we were talking about the rules. Now we got them. Cool. We even know how to stop her. There's probably going to be some. Com badge that you wear that'll just disrupt her somehow so she won't be able to get into.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think he said it like he wanted a belt buckle.
Was it a belt?
I think he said something like that. Yeah. Cause he had like a, didn't he have like, he had all like a anti gravity belt.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I think he was.
It's always fun to put high tech in a belt buckle.
And then he's like, I'm going to get to work and designing it right now or something. And he pulls out a tablet and he draws a rectangle. Right. I guess that's how you start. I don't know.
Why not?
I've never made one, so I really couldn't tell.
Benson's scene with Thomas, I think, is good and affecting.
The
whole notion that Thomas is basically messing with him, saying that he could hear everyone.
Well, and that's and a great callback to what happened in the fear dimension parts of the lighthouse when it got taken over by the monolith. Right.
It was great. And then Izell just kills him again, or evaporates him.
Right.
And the thing that turns Benson isn't, it's that he would have to relive that moment over and over. And he, that's what breaks him.
Right. Right. And her plan is good, actually. That's the other thing is the idea that she's going to reconstitute the monoliths from their fears. It's like, that's a really good use of something, you know, MacGuffins from last season.
Yeah, it's certainly, it's fascinating. I mean, so when it got down to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Temple of Doom, I was less into it. that set didn't really do it for me.
No, the set was not exactly, And I think Mac even says something about how he's not that impressed or something. throw a line in there to like say, okay, this is not our best work.
I know. I actually really, really love a show that can do that. Like this show has a lot of confidence and it does a lot of interesting, fascinating stuff. And you know what? Standing up an intricate ink and set, not easy. No. Remember when they tried that on TNG with, I can't even remember. It was like a seventh season episode.
Yeah, when Data gets possessed by some.
Wow,
yeah.
Is that a stinker? That is not good at all. No. It looks like garbage. At least in this one, it looks reasonably good. You know, it's fine. But it's goofy. It's this whole Incan angle doesn't really appeal to me that much. I don't really care about it. I don't really know why that's there.
Well, I think it's just there as a callback to the first season when they found. I mean, isn't it related to? I can't remember if it's the. It's not the same temple as the one in the first season. I don't think it's not supposed to be. But
no, the temp.
I think it was. It had something to do with where they found the monoliths, right?
Yeah, I think so. But wait, the only
which I don't even remember if they found them or because somebody else had the monoliths, right? That secret society had the monoliths.
Well, it had one of them at least.
Had the space one. Yeah,
I forget. Anyway,
so
we'll get there.
I can't remember, because they've had two, haven't they? And then the third one was made up for this season, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I forget. Anyway, good thing we're both rewatching out of sync, but rewatching it anyway. Yeah.
Well, no, the creation one must have been around because it creates their fears.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway. Yeah, and they've had the time one, obviously, and the space one.
I kind of would have liked it if the monoliths had lined up more with the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, something. I mean, because it seems like an obvious parallel.
Yeah, whatever. And they are icons, or they were at some point created from the Infinity Stones, and they are imbued with their power, and that's good enough.
Yeah, but they're distancing themselves, I guess, from them.
I guess so. I mean, the only difference, the creation one could be the Mind Stone.
Yeah, there's no creation.
No, there's no.
Yeah. Right.
Anything else you want to talk about for this?
For the reality or the reality?
Wait. Yeah, actually, creation would be the reality stone.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm not saying that they need to be a one to one.
And the reality, the stupid thing is the reality stone doesn't even make sense because its powers were in Thor 2 were nothing like its powers when Thanos got a hold of it.
No, but I am sort of okay with that in that with these weird things of infinite possibility, it's like a Green Lantern ring. It's going to be limited by your imagination. What do you want to do with it? Okay, I'll do that. You know, if you want to make a giant, I don't know, tow truck or, go for it. I could do more interesting stuff, but sure. You want to make a Tonka toy? Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A big,
big
scoop.
It's always a big scoop.
Got to scoop up your enemies.
So you got to do it. And then when you get them, you put them in a big green jail cell with no toilet. By the way, they never manifest a toilet in those Green Lantern cells.
Oh, no. Well, that seems complicated.
That does seem a bit complicated because then you know.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of want to give Green Lantern a little bit of a break. But when you've built a dedicated prison, you should have a toilet.
Especially,
and they did in the pipeline.
In the pipeline, they do. Well, because is that?
But just not in the.
I think
Arrow
the first
cave.
Mention of that is when. This is another sign that everybody listens to the show and they do exactly what we tell them to do. But I'm pretty sure that's a joke. But I'm pretty sure the first time we see that toilet is when is during the crossover when Barry and Ollie are both trapped in a cell. And they're trying to get out, and he's like, I don't know, they punch the wall and the toilet seat drops down or something?
Something like that, yeah. No, I think somebody says something, you know, one of them says, well, of course there's a toilet in here.
Right. Yeah.
We're not inhuman.
So good. So, so good.
Just push a button. It comes out of the wall.
Come on. What, you think we feed them burgers? We've got a little menu?
Yeah, really.
We're gluten-free down in the pipeline. I don't know if you want.
Killing them with big belly burgers. And so cruel.
You know, they're just lucky they didn't get skinned alive. So.
Yep, right, exactly. Count your blessings.
Anything else you want to comment on this app?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff with Piper but she sort of, that sort of argument just supports the argument between May and Daisy.
It does, but they've so fully realized these characters in some ways that, like, that argument makes sense. Piper's going to be pissed. They killed, they killed Maximilian Davis. She's angry. And, well, and she shot her own hand, which doesn't appear to be affecting her in any way. Fine.
No, she's a badass.
Well, she's a badass on TV. Yeah. Also, I don't even notice. I haven't even noticed a bandage on her hand. I'm sure they have one, but it's just not in the shots. But there must be
because I think she mentions it when she's
arguing. Yeah, that's it. She's like clearly not happy. I liked it. I liked that she went up against May on it, and I liked that that was the moment that we saw May turn to support Daisy. Oh, and previously, her previous scene, Piper's previous scene, she said something to Daisy about, I think she told her, Daisy tells her to go get some rest, and she's like, look, if you send me away, I'm going to mutiny, which I loved.
Right.
Because that's a very Daisy thing to do. Like, you can tell me to go away, but it's not going to work.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. Ratings?
Yeah, so no surprise. I'm gonna give it a biff.
Yeah, I'm also gonna give it a biff, which is the best out of the three ratings.
Yeah. I think we should probably. I know it seems like we should probably just give the whole season a biff.
Oh yeah, there was like honestly,
I have complete and utter faith in them.
Well, unless the next two episodes are just Coulson making farting noises or something, like there's like very little that they could do to screw this
up. I will still watch that.
I would watch it. He's a tremendous actor. I would watch it for sure.
The best fart
noises. It's not really my thing. That's all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So yeah, two biffs and in absentia, I'm going to say that Dan gives the other guy. Dan gives this one a John Jr.
Is that what happens when you abstain, when you're not here?
No, I like the idea of him being wrong
of Dan not liking it.
Let's just go for that. For some reason, he didn't like this one.
Okay, there's something he didn't like about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although he did take the time out from his honeymoon to send us a photo of a box of what basically looked like puffs, which was cute. Yeah. So him and his he and his new wife are just tripping balls right now. So. That's cool. It's a honeymoon.
I thought at one point that the puffs were going to come back because they were talking about hallucinogens, if hallucinogenics would make the person who was being, you know, when she was trying to control, not be controllable, and then they were like, I guess we shouldn't do that.
Yeah,
but I don't think nobody has any. The ship got blown up, so nobody has any puffs, as far as I know.
That can't be the only source of puffs in the universe.
Well, no, I'm sure there are more puffs in the universe, but they'd have to go back out in space to get them.
Yeah.
Unless they have some in the Zephyr, but the Zephyr's...
You don't, really? You don't think Simmons pocketed a few puffs? her face lights up every single time when she's on Kids.
That's
like,
true.
She's,
she does.
She's a serious puff head. It's going to become a problem for their relationship. It's really going to like screw up their marriage. She's just going to be there sitting, tripping balls, and he's going to be like, oh, look, can we solve this problem?
Yeah. Seeing her little dancing monkey.
She's going to, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a dark side plot for next season. anyway, so two biffs and a and the John Jr.
Yeah.
Good all around show. Now we'll go in.
Averages up to a biff.
Though. Now we'll go into the superhero sweep. And you know what's great? Here, Dan often drops a sound effect. And what he didn't do, because he's an inconsiderate man, is give me any of the audio files to be able to do any of this. Maybe they're in the shared folder. If you don't hear a sound effect...
I think they're in the shared... Let's just say they're in the shared folder.
If you don't hear a sound effect, just know...
Yeah, right. Just
this
imagine...
This is why I scuttled Dan and he gave this one to John Jr. Although knowing him, it's probably there with a, like, hey, guy, look here. Yeah, he's probably done all of that work.
Hey, dum-dums.
Superhero sweep. What's on your mind, pal?
Assets. Biff theme.
Oh, you're actually looking it up.
And then there's a template.
That's cool that you really just...
I don't see any...
It's probably inside the template. It's probably track.
Maybe there's a track inside the template. Yeah, it probably is.
But okay. Thanks for doing the homework to undercut my joke there. That's
sorry.
As a comedy duo, we're doing great, man. We're like really yes-anding each other here. Yeah. What do you got? What's on the docket?
Well, we were talking about Thor 4, which is not easy to say, right?
Did we not talk about that last week? Did we? I don't think so. I don't think that Thor news 4? Was out yet.
Okay. So anyway, Thor 4 is a thing that's going to happen, which I was kind of surprised by, actually. It wasn't on the docket.
I think 3 did so well. I mean, my...
Yeah. Yeah, I think they would be dumb
right.
not to do
I don't think they say this, but it seems that each character gets 3 movies and then they're out. You know? Or not out, but well, then they go get to do other stuff. Yeah. Like Iron Man had 3,
right.
Cap had 3.
Yeah, it's a that's what the contract's for.
Thor had 3, ended great. I think maybe Thor 4 is like, well, wait, we can do another one of those because that was amazing. I don't know relatively how it did in the box office.
I think it did well enough anyway. I mean, it wasn't up there with, obviously, you know, things like Endgame and the Avengers movies seem to do a little bit better. But I mean, just the movies that have them all in them seem to do better, even if they're not that great. Like, I think Age of Ultron did really well, and it was not, I mean, that's one of my least favorites.
Yeah, yeah. There's scenes in there I enjoy.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy all of the movies.
Right.
With the possible exception of The Incredible Hulk.
That's funny, because I was about to say you're not including The Incredible Hulk in there. But you know what?
Yeah.
I was actually on The Incomparable, the main show, talking about that movie last summer? This summer? I can't remember. Last summer.
Last summer.
And Summer of Marvel.
Was I on that episode?
No.
I can't remember now.
No. You did.
Okay.
You did Thor. Because you like
Thor
2 and
Thor
Jason
2.
Doesn't.
I had to do Thor 2. Because Jason and I have a thing about Thor 2.
You had to do Thor 2. Yeah. But yeah, no, I actually defended that movie. It's not great, but it's early. It was in production the same time as Iron Man 1. And it hits all of the Marvel beats. There's a bunch of action, bad guys with pretty clearly defined goals that aren't, unidimensional. There's sort of an struggling good guy. You know, he's never on top of the world. He's in this case, he's a fugitive. And you know, it all culminates in a giant battle that destroys part of a city, which is de rigueur,
which is referenced
in
the Avengers.
Yeah, which makes it canon, which is great because they kept changing the character and all that,
The thing is, it's not as well, you know, it tries to be a little more edgy in the fighting, particularly at the end, I think, and also the portrayal of the Hulk as a, like, sort of muscled out, like,
Yeah, they toned him down a bit for Avengers,
they got it so right by the time they got to Avengers. That was finally it was like, I mean, everybody was like, this is what the Hulk should look like, the sort of Stay Puft Marshmallow Man of the first movie, or the, you know, like, rubber band muscles of the second movie.
Although Go listen to the episode. I do appreciate things about the angry Hulk. The audacity, for one. It's not a great movie, but I'm sort of glad that it exists. It's like an early experiment in trying to take comic books and
yeah.
put them on the screen in an earnest way.
Yeah. It's much more enjoyable than the first one, the Ang Lee.
Oh, wait, no, I'm talking about the Ang Lee one when I say that.
Oh, you're talking about the Ang Lee one, really? Oh, okay. Well, I think the second one's a lot more enjoyable than
the second one's actually, I don't know, a good B movie. Fine, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not B as in cheap, but like, you know, I've had to read, put them in bands, you know? That's, you know, it's not up there. Ang Lee is like it's, forget it. I don't even want to give it a letter grade because it would be mean. But, As an interesting work of art and as something that is like a curiosity, I think there's stuff in there to realize. Yeah.
Well, and Feige worked on that movie. He was one of the producers of that movie.
And I think it,
which I was like, I remember why, because I rewatched it a couple of two years ago, and I was like, oh my god, he's been doing this for a long time, a lot longer than I thought. I thought he sort of came on and like all of a sudden everything. You know, like he knew what he was doing and everything came together, but no, he's been stumbling around trying to figure it out.
Yeah, no, I think the remit that Ang Lee got was okay, take this superhero stuff and take it seriously and bring the comics to screen. And he did. Way too literally. And I think the failure of that informed what the MCU went on to be. But I think without that movie, you're still like fumbling around trying to figure out what you actually want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause part of it is comic booky. Like there's a lot of like
panels. Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. And then part of it is like some trippy, like brain.
Well, it's all like his weird emotional, state with his dad and resentment over like his dad was abusive. It like, there's a lot going on there. And like, that's why he's the Hulk is because his dad was abusive, which is canon, I believe, to the character, depending on
I think that's true. There is something to that. Yeah. That's true.
So, but I mean, they play it weird and big, and there's radioactive gamma dogs, which are not great. It's not a great movie. It's not a great movie. I am happy that it exists because, I don't know. Every now and then, it's worth doing experiments. Like how many weird tech gadgets came out that are kind of interesting. Like cool.
Yeah, it's the Newton. It's the Newton of
It's not even a Newton
of superhero movies.
It's not even Newton. It's more one of those bendable phones. They have the ship. Also, I'm going to change the conversation at this
they
point.
Did not. We were talking about Thor 4, which will apparently, you know, spoiler alert, will feature Jane Foster as what are we calling her? Are we calling her Lady Thor?
She's Thor. There's no lady. She's Thor. She's Thor.
Yeah.
Whoever possesses the, what is it? I can't remember the little Green Lantern chant that they have for the hammer, but it's whoever possesses the nobility type thing of Thor. Whoever can lift.
Whoever's worthy
to lift Mew Mew shall have the power of Thor. Which is why when Cap lifts up Mew Mew, he's suddenly throwing lightning around, you know? Which is badass.
Which is great. Which is so great.
Oh, man. That part of the movie is just killer. I'm really...
And speaking of that movie comes out on digital tomorrow.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing the extras.
Yes, me too. I pre-ordered it on iTunes, so... Yeah.
Yeah, so did I, so...
I'd start buying Blu-rays.
I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
That's like the rest of the week is booked at this point.
Trimming trees.
Not a bad way to spend a day. So also in this movie is Tessa Thompson, who is amazing. She's amazing. I literally watch her in anything. She's she has a charisma to her that is, and a capability and a range of expression that are remarkable. I think she's just she's really great.
And they're and of course Taika Waititi.
Exactly, that's where I was going. Taika Waititi is the director. The logo for this thing. Have you seen it?
It's nuts.
It is the best. So the subtitle is Love and Thunder. This is so great.
It's pretty tacky.
That's what I like about it. The word Thor is written in sort of like, you know what, like, you know, you and I have seen this stuff in real life as it was a little bit okara, right? Like, this was on the side of Vans when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're a little bit older than me, but you know what I mean? Like it's a it's a gradient from blue going through white, through orange, and then down to red. And it's an airbrush effect. It is a flat-out airbrush effect. You mask off this thing, and then you start doing airbrush, and it looks great. And the title is Love and Thunder. And it goes back to, oh, God, I wish I could remember the name of the classic magazine. I'm so bad with names. You know what I'm talking about. It's not 20,008.
Heavy metal. Or...
That's it. I was thinking, I got stuck on 20,000 AD, and I knew it wasn't that. And heavy metal. Mm-hmm. Like, that lineage is, like, pretty clear. It looks great. Yeah. If you told me that this was a He-Man movie, I would believe it. And I would not want to see it. Because it looks like a He-Man thing, right? Like, look at this thing.
Yeah, it does.
But and I would not want to see it. But it's Thor, and it's Taika Waititi, and these people know how to enjoy themselves. And they're going to embrace all of the great parts about this. And I'm without, I think, getting too tacky.
Yeah.
So I'm all in. I'm really excited about Thor.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's no question. Yeah. I mean, I'm in for like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm so far into this stuff that it's
right. Yeah.
I'm pretty pathetic at this point.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they could put out a movie that's just MODOK moping around his lab. I would probably watch it.
Oh my God! Yeah. I would love that.
It's got to be John Hodgman though. Apparently, he really wants to play MODOK. Which
oh,
I would,
man.
Yeah, take my money.
Did you ever read the Secret Avengers run?
No, I didn't actually.
Okay, yeah, you should check that out because he's in that, and it's Coulson's in it, and Hawkeye, and Spider Woman, Maria Hill, and MODOK is in it, and MODOK is just. Fantastic.
So funny.
He's so hilarious.
Such a funny character.
Yeah. And then he comes back. He comes back in the latest run of Hawkeye, the Kate Bishop Hawkeye run. And he's changed himself. Like he's remolded himself and he has like a normal sized body. So they have this big problem with like, you know, these giant people start showing up in like Southern California and they're wreaking havoc, you know, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman style. And then this person shows up, to save the day and stop these giant people from attacking. And the person's head is just slightly big and they're all like, and at first they're kind of like, you know, who is this guy? And then, you know, as he you know, says, you know, like, oh, now I'm going to go check and make sure everything's okay or something like that. After he stops them all, they're like, that's totally MODOK, isn't it? Yeah, that's absolutely that MODOK. I like it that his head's, and someone says, I like it that his head's just a little bit too big.
It's perfect.
Also a pretty good run.
Just for the readers out there, go look up MODOK because I will probably,
if you have
I'll
not,
probably not figure out how to add much to the show notes. But he's basically a giant metal head.
With a tiny little body.
Like, does he even? Yeah, he's got like a tiny little body. Like his
chair thing.
Yeah, effectively, like picture sort of a squared off sort of cylinder with a face in the middle of it, like a giant face in the middle of it, and like tiny arms and tiny legs sticking. And he just floats around and is kind of a maniacal, evil scientist guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to get him confused with the guy who was in Captain America.
Not Nemo. What? Zemo.
Not Zemo. Zemo's the guy.
Did you get that? I went from Nemo from Finding Nemo to Remo from Remo Williams, and then I finally got Zemo, which is, you know, a bit of a long journey. Zemo's in Civil War, and they really have rehabilitated that character because he's
he's coming back for Falcon and Winter Soldier. He's going to be in that. And apparently we'll wear the mask.
Really? Because that's a funny sock mask.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I saw that someplace.
Well, you know
yeah.
what? You can make that look like a balaclava, right? Like a special ops looking balaclava. Like you can make that look mean. Right. Like Cobra Commander. No, not him. Was it Cobra Commander? Yeah, it's him. Yeah.
I think that's... Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm going to look up his name because like, it's driving me crazy now. And I should.
Zola. That's it. Yeah.
The computer...
So are we to understand that Zola just blew himself up there? Because that seems ineffective.
I guess so. I mean, unless he's got, you know, he could have a backup someplace.
Yeah,
that's, that could show up.
Yeah, you'd have to believe that. Why would you? You can't just be living on tapes.
It's so funny, like, you know, that it's so funny. I don't know if you've watched Detectorists. No, you should. It's a great show. But it's, you know, it's about these guys in rural England who are metal detectorists.
I have heard of this, it's mostly just these guys
walking around in fields with metal detectors, and you know, it's a little bit about their relationships and stuff like that. It's a great show. It was just, you know, particularly after certain things happened in this country, it was like that was my quiet place that I would I would go to. And Toby Jones is like the main
Toby
the
Jones
main
is great
or
he's
one of the two
just,
main characters.
Really fun.
Yeah. And it's funny seeing that show and thinking of him as Zola.
He's on an episode of Doctor Who too as I forget what his character was, but sort of an equivalently weirdly powerful dude to the Doctor. Anyway, fun stuff. Did you want to talk about Pennyworth?
Briefly, because I've only seen half of the
premiere. Also, you know, I think we've actually managed to make this enough of a show. So,
sure.
Turns out we don't need Dan after all. So,
we can. So it's stylistic. I mean, it's filmed very beautifully, and it's, you know, they managed to portray the setting. So I guess it's supposed to be set in the 60s. In England, early 60s, probably mid 60s, something like that. Because they play some rock and roll music in the background. I think it's the Stones, and I can't remember if it's the Stones or the Who right now. It's good. My impression, I'm not going to do any spoilers, but and frankly, from what I've seen, if you've seen the trailer, I don't think I know much more than what's in the trailer. But it's a little over the top. I mean, it looks like it must have been filmed in England, because I know everybody appears to be, other than the people who are supposed to be American, everybody appears to be, you know, genuinely British. I don't know who it was written by, because a lot of the talk is like a sort of over the top British. You know, there's just a lot of like, you know, sort of tea and crumpets. I mean, it's a little, that part is laid on a little thick, I think.
I wonder.
But I think they do a nice job of sort of making it, laying the setting.
That's cool.
And setting an atmosphere. So I'm definitely going to keep watching.
But the basic premise is sound. It's not like.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of his, you know, there seem to be building up to sort of a conflict with him in his past in terms of him having been in, you know, I'm not sure which war he was supposed to have been in. This looks like it's set in the.
But how old is he in the 60s?
So he said he was in India. He was fighting in India. I don't know. He's supposed to be fairly young, because at one point he takes his new girlfriend to meet his parents, and you know, they're talking about you young people sort of thing. He doesn't look, you know, his hair is receding fairly well, so he looks like he must be at least like in his late 20s. And he said that he was in the army for 10 years and just out of the army and started trying to start up his own like security business. So, and then he, you know, runs into Thomas Wayne basically.
Interesting.
And there's a fascist organization that's wants to take over Britain, and they've got some scheme plotting, but I don't
know. Well, that seems like that's always the way, John. And
yes, exactly.
let's leave it on that happy note. Anything else that you have that you don't want to mention about a fascist organization trying to take over Western states?
I don't think I have any other superhero related topics.
Yeah. Okay, man, let's just call that a show.
We'll call that a show. I would like to thank Guy English for joining me on the episode tonight.
I would like to thank my co-host, John Maltz, for joining me tonight. Taking a break from his regular hosting gig over at the talk show.
I was rudely interrupted in my trimming by the talk show. As I explained to you before we started recording. Yeah.
Okay, pal. Let's call it. Did we say something to end this show? I can't even remember.
We used to go dun 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 dun.
Now we don't do that.
But that's not. I can't do the shield noise. There is like a shield noise, but I don't know what that is. Something like, I don't know.
Anyway, keep reading. Bye.
Just take a puff and call it a night.
That's our new sign off. You heard it here first, folks. Take a puff, call it a night.
I should write that down.
Write it down because we got to keep that.
right under Piper gets the crossover award.
Write that one down. Yeah. Take a puff and call it a night. It sounds like we're promoting smoking, which we're not, but whatever.
No, we're just promoting the use of
casual drug abuse.
Let's casual be clear about that.
Totally different.
We're not promoting the use of cigarettes or even like, you know, jewels, puffs.
All right, man.
Okay.
Take a puff. See you later.
I'm going to stop recording.